things were going to come up. I remember one time I was down the down the coast, and I'd written a speech for Ian McPhee on the dangers of the new right. And I remember going down to the local shop to pick up the Australian on Saturday morning, and here's the main banner headline: McPhee slams new right. And I just knew when we came back that there was going to be all sorts of stuff on that, because, you know, McPhee was speaking out more and more as he got more frustrated with what was happening. And he was really aggravating a lot of people who were Liberal supporters and Liberal backers opposing this so-called new right push. But there's a very conservative, you know, National Farmers Federation, but, you know, new right in general, and a lot of the economic dries and all that sort of stuff. People like Des Keegan in the Financial Review, and, you know, there was a lot of debate at that stage, but it was really, and McPhee was sort of lashing out a bit, and every time he did, just, you know, there was trouble, and the media just go crazy and wanted to talk to him.
When you made the decision to resign, did you have something in mind that you would move on?
Well, I knew I could go back teaching, but I wasn't keen to do that. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I knew the public service was there if I wanted to. So what I did initially, I had a bit of a break, and then I did some short-term teaching in Canberra in the colleges here. So I went and taught after the election, from February of 87. So I taught in a few different colleges in Canberra. And in that time, I then also applied for the Political Science Fellowship in the Commonwealth Parliament. And McPhee did a bit of work behind the scenes to help lobby for me, which I was very grateful for. But I applied for that, and that in those days was a two-year fellowship. The fellowship's now a lot shorter. But basically, I applied for that, I got it. So at the start of 88, so I did some teaching, rest of 87, start of 88, became Political Science Fellow, and that meant 1 year working in the research service in the library, and then the second year doing a research paper. And that research paper's where I did those 90-odd interviews for members and senators. So I worked in the research service for a year and geared up for my research project, which was basically looking at how the move from this building to the new building in late 88, how that affected the operation of Parliament, how it affected the executive-parliament relationship, and a whole range of other things too, and what people thought of the different buildings, party discipline, all that sort of stuff.
I'm keen that we talk about that, but you also did a research paper, as it was in the beginning, was the title of it, Parliament House in 1927.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right to think that you wrote that prior to...
Yeah. When I was Political Science Fellow, I said that first year I worked in the research service, I wrote that paper in that first year. And I did that deliberately. It was my idea that I thought that a lot of the members, and there were a lot of members who shifted up, obviously, in 88, a lot of the members would be interested in just getting a feel for what old Parliament House was like when it first opened. So we're moving into the new building, and so they're experiencing when it's first opened. I thought I'd try and get a flavour for what the building was like in 1927. And there was a lot of interest. A lot of members rang up and said, yeah, it was very interesting, and asked for copies and whatever. So I found some great old photos of the building in 1927, which are in the back. And in the appendices, I listed all the members and the cabinet and the building and how big the rooms were, and had some plans of the building, all that sort of stuff. But went through and looked at who the members were, who the characters were, what the main issues were, what was debated, who the ministers were, and interestingly, some of the main issues that were debating in 1927 are exactly what they're debating today, and when I wrote the paper. So the same recurring themes, but one of the themes I put in there was there's always this tension between the executive and the parliament, and that certainly showed up then, and it's still evident now. But I really enjoyed doing that. That I went out to the archives in Mitchell and tried to dig up and look at various things about 1927, and I found old invitations and all sorts of things that were interesting. It was fascinating going out there. So I had a pretty much free rein as to how I did it. But yeah, a lot of the members were interested, and I was basically just trying to get a feel what this place was like, and Canberra, in 1927.
Did you speak with people who were around at the, in 1927 at all?
I didn't go that far. I mean, I just went to the archives, and I was a bit time limited. I mean, I had to get the thing finished, and I had other work to do at the same time, so I didn't do that. But yeah, I did find out lots of interesting things about what it was like here in 1927.
And we have a copy here.
Yeah, you've got a copy there, yeah. So.
Let's talk now then about the Political Science Fellowship, that project. What inspired you to look at that topic?
Well, when I applied, I had to suggest what sort of topic I'd like to research. And I was always interested in the Parliament-Executive sort of relationship because, you know, there's all this theory about how, you know, parliamentarians have got their own, you know, responsibilities and their own power and all that sort of stuff. But over from my reading of Australian political history, over time the executives become more and more dominant. I mean, the ministry dominate, party disciplines become more stronger. And I thought I'd have a good in-depth look at whether in fact that's correct or not, but also what the impact was. And because it was a historic time, we were moving from this building to the new one, there was a one-off chance, you know, if there was going to be any interest in this topic, it was going to be at the time it happened. So I thought, well, here's a chance for me to jump in, have a look at what people think, people who worked here and they worked in the new one, how do they compare the two? What do they think? How do they think it affected Parliament Executive? How did it affect relations in general? You know, how did it affect all sorts of things? And what did they think of the new conditions compared to the old? So it was as much the timing as anything. It was 1988 when I got this, and I knew the move was going to happen in 88. So I thought it would be topical, relevant, and you get one chance to do it. I mean, it'd be hard to do it 10 years later. It'd be hard to do it even 5 years later. So I thought I had to do that. Now, I was interested in it, but it was the timing. Yeah. And I did it just after we'd moved into the new building. That's when I started to, you know, get it all together and get a questionnaire going. And then after I'd done all that, then I did the interviews with 90-odd people who worked in the building and a really good cross-section of parties, different level officials, press gallery. So I think I got a pretty good snapshot of what people thought. It was a good sample. And they were all very open with me about it. I mean, I wish that I had more time to do it. I could have done it better in lots of ways, but I wanted to get it done and got it done.
Were you supervised?
Yeah, I was basically answerable to the head of the research service in the library. And the supervisor changed, I think, three times while I was there at three different... But it was basically my own baby. I did get some political scientists to look at the written project when I'd done the Australian Political Studies Association were involved. So, yeah, but basically I was left to my own devices to get on with it and do it. And I must say, of all the things I've done in my working life, it was probably as enjoyable as anything I'd done. I mean, the time with McPhee was just fascinating to see and watch up close. This was a really interesting piece of research to do, and I was getting paid to do it.
Yep.
It was, you know, if you can get into a position where something you really like and you can get an income off it, it was a great 2 years.
Why did you decide to record the people rather than why not just take notes?
Yeah, well, I think it was just simply to make it easier for myself. I could go in and I could start talking, and I know if you're talking to anyone, particularly politicians, though, if they're talking and they're talking fairly quickly, if I'm trying to take notes and you've also at the same time got to think about your next question, I reckon I'm going to miss a lot of stuff. So I thought the easiest way was set up appointments with these people, so, you know, interview, take my tape player in, and I was then free to not just stick to the script. I could ask questions on things that they weren't all particularly directly relevant, but it was just fascinating to get so many different angles on all sorts of things. And I just thought if I took notes, It'd be nowhere near as efficient. And I'd have trouble reading my own writing. And so having it on tape, I could at my leisure then go back and sift through it.
And did you already have a tape recorder, or did Parliament provide that?
No, it was my own tape recorder. I think I already had it. And it was, you know, quite a big chunky one by today's standards. But the thing I wanted was a tape to tape so I could record from one to the other.
Oh, yes.
And it had a pretty good microphone in it, so I just plonk it on the desk. And you've heard the quality of the tapes. They're not too bad, considering, you know, it was fairly primitive technology. But, I mean, even if I had sophisticated equipment, I probably couldn't be able to carry it around. We'd have to organise, you know, interviews. It'd be a lot harder to get people. If I could go straight to their office, it was a lot easier. And it didn't take time to set up or anything. I just press a button and off we go.
As far as the parliamentarians were concerned, were they all cooperative, or were there some who declined?
I wrote to every politician in the building, and I can't remember the exact numbers, but I got something like 45-50%, I think. It was fairly high anyway. It was a pretty good percentage. There certainly were a number who just ticked the box, because when I did a questionnaire asking them similar things, the bottom I said, are you interested in an interview? And some people just said no. You know, the Prime Minister said no, and, you know, quite. I got three or four ministers, but a number of ministers didn't, obviously. For some of them, it'd be time, other people weren't interested. Same with the press gallery. I approached, I think, pretty well all the senior press gallery people. And a couple of them just said no. I rang up and said, are you interested? And they just said no, I'm not interested. But for the most part, I got a pretty good response. I think it was something close to 50% of pollies. You know, and there were all parties represented.
Yep. Why did you keep the tapes?
Well, I didn't want to just throw them out. I thought there was lots of fascinating political stuff there. They were all done confidentially. And there were some fascinating discussions there. The last thing I wanted to do was throw them away. I wanted to keep them. And it's been in the back of my mind for a while, and when we shifted house, and I knew they were there and they're in the back shed. I certainly didn't want them to just fade away. I think they're important. And as I've said to you, Barry, separately, I think they're probably the only decent snapshot from the horse's mouth, direct primary evidence of what people thought about the, you know, the new and the old building at that time. So I think it'd be a shame if they disappeared anywhere. But I just kept them, and I knew at some stage I was going to do something. And I thought after 25 years it was about time. So,
yeah, we're glad you did.
I thought, yeah, I approached the National Library and they put me on to you. So I thought it was about time that they should be preserved. And I think, you know, for researchers or just people interested in politics, there's some really fascinating insights in there. Most of them were pretty open to me, quite frank about colleagues and stuff like that. So, yeah, there's some really fascinating insights into politics. And, I mean, I only used a fraction of it in my paper. And some of those tapes I've only listened to once. You know, they've only been played once.
How did the paper go down after it was published? Did you get positive feedback or lack of interest?
Yeah, it's a bit hard. I mean, I think I got a front page article on The Australian.
Oh.
Got interviewed by a number of radio stations all around the country. Did two or three television interviews. Got interviewed on 666 Radio here in Canberra. So there was an initial interest, but, you know, typical media, after about a week, other issues come up. So there's initial interest. And I made sure, you know, people in the press gallery got copies and what sort of stuff. So there was initial interest, but then it sort of faded fairly quickly. But over the years, I notice in journals and academic articles, even in textbooks, there's a mention of it here and there as a study on Parliament. But after a while, those sort of things just fade. And you always have high hopes for your papers, but I wished I had more time, because I would have done it a little bit differently. But it went over fairly well, and given I know the way the media works, I didn't expect much more. A lot of members were interested in that, but their life just goes on and they're all busy.
Yeah.
So it sort of then faded away, and you hear a little bit about it every now and then. So.
And is there anything else you'd like to say about that project?
I don't think so, except that I think it's unique in that no one else has done anything of that detail on that issue. So I was really pleased to be able to do that and do something that I don't think anyone else has done. And I mean, they can't do it now in the same way I did, because you haven't got people who've worked in the old Parliament House. There's only a handful left.
Yes, yes. What did you do from 1989, 1990? Can we just have like an outline?
Sure. I finished the political science fellowship in end of, it was 88, 89. In 1990, I joined the Commonwealth Public Service, and I did a stint in the Department of Primary Industry, what they called DOPI in those days, Primary Industry and Energy. I did 6 months there and hated every minute of it. I was involved in what was called a rural research unit, which sounded nice and sounded like there was going to be some good researchy type stuff, which I'd been involved in research for a lot of years. It really was, it was badly run, badly managed. A lot of times there was no direction on the work. There was nothing of substance to do. They were publishing stuff that was incorrect. I point out the fact that they're incorrect, and then you were told to pull your head in. So I had 6 months there, and I couldn't wait to get out. And so I applied, and I got a job as a committee secretary at the ACT Legislative Assembly. So I was committee secretary there, secretary of the Social Policy Committee and the Planning Committee, and did a few stints in other committees when people were away. Did a lot of work on estimates committees. And that was interesting to see how the smallest parliament in Australia operates compared to the largest. And was involved in all sorts of inquiries of interest to the ACT. I think the first one I was involved in was whether there should be a ban on front fences in the ACT or not.
Okay.
Things like that. It was an interesting time, and there were some interesting characters there, like Trevor Kane and Kate Carnell and Eleanor Grasby and Norm Jensen and Annette Ellis, who was my local member. I got to know Annette there. I worked with her in the Social Policy Committee. So I did that for 3 years. Then I got a job as a senior researcher in the research service in the library. Which is where I first met you.
That's right.
You came up and worked there for a while. So I was there pretty well through to when I retired in 2008, I think. And while I was there, lucky, I had a really fortunate to go on a parliamentary delegation trip to India and Bangladesh, which was really interesting to see those countries sort of from the diplomatic insider perspective was really interesting.
Was that to look at their parliamentary library services?
No, not so much. I went just on a parliamentary delegation in general, and there were four members who went, including Senator Ross Lightfoot, who was a bit of a character, Andrew Southcott, Bernie Ripple, and Kelly Hoare from New South Wales. It was a parliamentary delegation went over, and I mean, I was basically the organiser and the contact and the administrative part of it. Like a secretary, I guess. But yeah, everywhere we went, we was, first-class treatment. We were met by all the diplomats, and we met the President of India, and we met the Prime Minister of Bangladesh, and we met all the foreign ministers, and, we were helicoptered all around Bangladesh by the Prime Minister's helicopter. It was just a fascinating insight to our work, and at the end of that, I wrote up a report which no one ever reads, on the parliamentary delegation. The aim of that's to sort of improve relations between parliamentarians in these countries. And it was a fascinating, it was really hard work, but fascinating stuff. But really interesting work in the research service too. Lots of interesting research for members and senators and governor generals and ex-prime ministers. And
I'm trying to remember the desk that you were on. What
I moved around a bit. I had an office next to Adrian for a long time.
I mean the desk in the sense of...
What area?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I did education for a fair while, secondary education. Then I moved into aspects of community services, aged care, childcare, disability services, public housing, a lot of, you know, under the broad umbrella community services type stuff. It was a real grab bag of stuff. So, yeah, basically doing work for members and senators on those areas. Wrote a few papers on various things. But again, you know, I deliberately set it up, or tried to set up my financial situation, so I had the option at 55 to, you know, with the superannuation the way it was, you, it was an incentive there. So at 55, I'd had enough, and I deliberately set out in the early years when we first came to Canberra to have a good inside look at politics and how it works, and I think I achieved that because worked for a member. I did the political science fellow, all that research, and then in the research service. I'd worked in both the buildings, and I'd worked in the National Parliament and the Toy Parliament, they call the ACT Legislative Assembly. So I pretty well covered everything I wanted to do in terms of, instead of just being a teacher of politics in country Victoria and talking about it and reading textbooks, I really wanted to have a good close hard-up look at it myself, and I did achieve that. So that was, you know, I'd had enough by the time I'd retired, and I keep a bit of an interest, but I'm really pleased I don't have to read all the papers all the time and follow the politics all the time. And I think the older I get, as we were talking before, I think the mellower I get and the more moderate and conservative I get. I think it happens to most people. But I must say, out of all that political studying it and then working in it and being involved with it and researching it, I have come out reasonably cynical.
Yes.
But the one thing that does, I mean, from what I've seen overseas, and I've seen quite a few different countries and different legislatures, and, you know, I've been to the UK Commons and all that sort of stuff, I think our system of parliamentary democracy runs pretty well, even though we look at it up close and see all the faults and flaws. And I mean, our democracy does work pretty well. We don't slug it out in the streets like they do in Bangladesh or India, and, you know, we've had very little political violence in our history. The most traumatic event's probably in 1975, and we got through that without slugging it out in the streets. I think our political democracy works fairly well, even though if you're up close to it and you see all the faults, you do get pretty cynical, and it could all work better. But we're dealing with human beings, and everyone's got faults and foibles and things we disagree with.
How do you feel when you come back to this building?
Oh, a bit nostalgic. I can have lots of memories. Had some good times here. Had some fairly average times too. But I've certainly got a soft spot for the building. I like the look of it. I like the architecture of it. You know, from a distance, I think it's quite attractive. And it had that sort of lived-in feel about it. It was pretty ordinary. The offices were terrible and all that, but you couldn't help but meet different people, and there's so many interesting people in the building. And there's always hordes of visitors coming in to talk to shadow ministers and ministers, and you meet so many different people. It was a fascinating environment, but yeah, a bit nostalgic. But if someone asked me to, if it reverted back to Parliament, you want to come and work here tomorrow, I'd probably say no. not in that political aspect. A different sort of job maybe, but not the political stuff.
Is there anything you'd like to say about how you find the two buildings? Just a general kind of comment on.
I think the new buildings serves its purpose pretty well, and they've built it into that hill. The members definitely and ministers needed better facilities. I've always been a bit worried about having ministers in the Parliament House building. Like in Westminster, a lot of the ministers are located in their departments. And originally, when this building was done, that was intended because the ministers were actually either in West Block or East Block. And they did some renovations at one stage, I think I might mention in that paper, and the ministers actually ended up almost by default coming into this building and getting offices. And ever since that time in Australia, we've had this quirk of, you know, Westminster system of the ministers being in the building. And as soon as you do that, the executive, I think, gets a lot more control. Mightn't make a lot of difference, but I think it'd make some difference. So you've got that big ministerial wing on one end. It is a huge building, and it is hard for people to meet and whatever, but I mean, you've got to give people decent facilities to work in. You've got to have decent chambers. You've got to have a bit of space. And I think all the public areas up there are pretty good. Most of the people who visit the building appreciate it. It costs a lot to run and maintain, but there's no way you could stay in this building much longer than they did. I mean, it was the Provisional Parliament House in 1927, and they were talking about moving out of it from the 1930s and 40s. It just took so long. But yeah, I think the new building probably served its purpose pretty well, but there's certainly some downside in it.
In the new building?
In the new building. Yeah, I think there's less informal contact, and it's not as people-friendly, and that's part of its size, but also its design. But, you know, the press gallery conditions in this building were just appalling, and at least now they've got decent facilities. And again, I think visually from a distance, New Parliament House looks pretty impressive.
Yes.
They did a good architectural job on it. I know Peter Walsh was really concerned about the cost of the flagpole, which the flagpole, I think it's got titanium or something in it, it's $95 million just for the flagpole. Now, that sounded extraordinary. I mean, originally the building was going to cost $400 or $500 million. It ended up costing about $1,300 million. The flagpole was nearly $100 million. And Senator Walsh, as a finance minister, was really uptight about the flagpole. But it's such a defining part of the Canberra landscape. And I think the whole flagpole on the top of Parliament is really good, even if it is worth its weight in gold.
Well, look, thank you very much for today. I'll be in touch again to send you a copy of the interview on CD. And yes, thank you for your time and for a valuable addition to our collection.
Thanks very much, Barry, for inviting me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.